Abbotsford, BC is the largest municipality in the Fraser Valley Regional District, an ex-urban area about an hour east of Vancouver. It's growing very quickly, with the 2013 City of Abbotsford Official Community Plan expecting 40,000 new residents within 20 years. The citizens of Abbotsford held a well-attended Black Lives Matter protest last spring, but the municipal government routinely denies that racism is a problem in the city. Photos of well-known KKK members hang on museum walls. There is almost no representation for people of color on city council, and the white and brown communities in Abbotsford are visibly segregated. As CIVL Radio learned through the production of this show, people of color in the community don't feel heard or included. While the accomplishments of known white supremacists are still documented, framed, and distributed, both historical and ongoing racism in Abbotsford remains hushed. This creates tension between white and non-white people in the valley and can have dire consequences. Why is nobody talking about it? And what does this silence say about the community? This country was born out of the violent seizure of land that belonged to Indigenous people across Turtle Island, and the systems that it's built upon continue to disenfranchise Black people, Indigenous people, and people of color every day. Abbotsford is the homeland of the Stolo, or the people of the river, now represented formally through the Sumas First Nation and the Matsqui First Nation. I'm recording this show on Coast Salish land, stolen from the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples, and I'm grateful to live and work here. I'm Allie Laube for CIVL Radio, and this is Abbotsford's Hushed History of Racism. This series was funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiative. To find the print and blog posts of this and other content from the Local Journalism Initiative, visit canada-info.ca. This content might include some explicit language. Last July, a business owned by Abbotsford councillor Brenda Falk and her husband incited controversy when they left an All Lives Matter comment on a downtown Abbotsford Instagram post that supported Black Lives. The business, Tanglebank Gardens, is a family-owned farm and restaurant in Abbotsford. "Let's treat people with respect and dignity, no matter what color or gender they are," read the comment. "Treat people the way you want to be treated, and let's stop the BS." The comment was quickly challenged by Sharanjit Kaur Sandra, a sessional instructor in the University of the Fraser Valley's History Department, co-chair of the Race and Racism Network, and coordinator for the South Asian Studies Institute at the university. "So, supporting people of color is BS, eh?" she tweeted on July 24th, mentioning the company, council, and Falk's party, Abbotsford First. Over 6 months later, she's still not satisfied with the response.
"To this day, there have been young people speaking out on social media, demanding accountability. There have been petitions signed, and there has been nothing but ignoring and deflecting and gaslighting from our mayor and councillors. Not one single councillor has held her accountable as a representative of our community and a very diverse community, right? The Fraser Valley has one of the largest per capita Sikh South Asian populations in all of British Columbia. It has an incredibly large Black population. It has an incredibly large Indigenous population. All these committees, even our representation from councillors and our mayor, it is a very homogenous representation of our community. And therefore, they only know what they've lived, right? They only know what their communities or their churches or their cultural, that's all they know. So how can you even begin to fathom what my lived experience is? What I am telling you, right? As a Sikh woman, having lived here for 32 years, how can you even begin to understand me if you're not even willing to listen to me?"
Abbotsford News covered the incident, sparking debate in the comment section. And this kind of racial division within the city is not uncommon. The Tanglebank comment isn't an isolated incident, says Sandra. In reference to another broader issue, Sandra is deeply troubled by the segregation between white Abbotsford and brown Abbotsford, as she says.
"Once again, I'm taking out my time and energy to call out these systems of power in our community that perpetuate racism, right? They created a segregation between white Abbotsford and brown Abbotsford, essentially. And I've been told by my white friends that when they first moved to Abbotsford, they were told by their white realtors to not go to a specific part of town, West Abbotsford, because it's a shithole. lived in by like a majority South Asian community. Henry Braun goes, I'm shocked, I didn't know of this. So you know what you only know, right? This is a willful, violent ignorance to say, I am not only not going to listen to what many voices in Abbotsford are saying, I'm going to hold a barrier to perpetuate my white supremacy, my white power, and this is what Abbotsford is. There is one brown person, Kelly Chahal, who's our counselor. And they have to understand, when you are part of a machine and a system of white supremacy, having one brown face or one black face or one indigenous face will not solve the problem. And in fact, it's even more so difficult for those people to push back against a machine that's been there for a century. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about a machine of culture and thinking that has not really changed at the depth that we want it to.
Kelly Chahal is currently the only person of color on Abbotsford City Council. She's Malaysian, but her great-grandfather came to Canada 100 years ago, and her family has roots in the Fraser Valley. She realized at a young age that having cultural and racial diversity in any organization is an asset, and says that the lack of diversity on the board puts its members at a disadvantage.
I agree that there needs to be diversity on council, that we need to represent the community, and we don't. Right now, I value the work that I do, but I know how hard it is. I had to take extra steps, you know, and then I found that to have a voice, I had to speak a little bit louder and, you know, maybe qualify myself a little bit more. You know, if I was in a room with people, what I have control over was maybe education. And so I thought to myself, let me build this up so I can be seen a little bit more clearly. It shouldn't be that hard to have your voice heard. I do see change. The fact that I'm on council, as the person that's always been behind the scenes, slowly trying to make herself be seen, you know, tells me that there's potential for others as well. And I really encourage that. I think in our community, we are one of the most diverse communities in Canada. We should have much more diversity than we do. The nuances and the differences is what will help us grow. Because we'll have differing thoughts and differing views, and we can respectfully discuss those and talk about those. And that way, not only are we affecting change, but we're also sending a message that we represent the community.
Being the only woman of color in the room isn't always easy, though. Back in school, she remembers asking to go to a friend's house, only to be told she couldn't.
It makes me think of a really good friend I have. And when we were in school, we had an assignment and she invited me. We had to work together, so I invited her to my house. But I said, I could come to your house. And she says, Kelly, no, you can't come to my house. My dad has a shotgun and he doesn't like colored people. And, you know, I thought to myself,
wow.
And, you know, she told me the truth. And I had to take her truth, her reality, right? And not to debate it with her, but to form a relationship with her. And because clearly that's what she faced at home, but that's not what she wanted going forward. And oftentimes I find that the labeling or the shaming, the blaming, how is somebody going to move forward? How are they going to have a different experience if I shut the door?
Another time she remembers getting a cup of coffee at a board meeting and being asked if she was cleaning staff by another woman in attendance.
The way I feel racism at times is people would like to actually see me out of the room. And I'm not going out of the room. I want to sit at the table. And that means I had to be assertive. I had to be clear. And, you know, sometimes I just have to suck it up, right? Because things do affect me. But if my goal is that I want to be at that table, I will try to make it work out. Where I can affect change as a council member is raising my voice and saying, where's the process in this? Where's the policy that dictates transparency? Where's the matrix? What are we looking at? How are we advertising this? How are we engaging? How are we networking? So I think policy, but mindful policy will stay. You know, I could be here today, but not here tomorrow. But that is something I think that's really important, is to ensure that the policies that we're setting are responsive and inclusive.
Providing comprehensive diversity training to counselors and creating responsive, inclusive policies would help, she says.
We're doing a lot of work, and you know what? We need to do more work. We all recognize that, but you know, at least we're getting somewhere. I have been the token person many times because just because of my age, that's how things usually started, right? back in the day. So like that, they would need that one person that, and you know, you wouldn't really be given the respect or the voice. You wouldn't be given the opportunity to express. And I don't believe in that. I don't think just because you're from a different culture that you're going to be a good representative, but at least we should have people from different cultures. Like, we're not even there yet where we can decipher from, you know, the variety that we have, because we're not even there yet.
Mark Forcier is the Vice President of Black Connections, a club at UFE that he helped start to foster a greater community for Black people in Abbotsford. Forcier is Haitian-Canadian, and growing up, he felt isolated and unrepresented in the Valley. Black Connections keeps the Black community strong there, even though the organizers have long since graduated. Forcier attended the March Against Systemic Silence demonstration in Abbotsford last summer, and was very surprised by the high turnout of people.
It was just still not as big as I'd want for Abbotsford, for like a city of 160,000. Mm-hmm. But it was still great. For Allison, you're like still amazed. You're like, this is amazing. People do care here. Wow. So I was moved by it, even though it was so small, but it was a great demonstration.
He hopes that means people in the area are waking up to the realities of racism in their own communities. Black Connections has noticed more local groups asking to collaborate and consult with Black leaders. But Forcier says he has seen, quote, no change at all in terms of infrastructure.
Groups have been now requesting like ways to work and make areas in which we can, where there can be collaboration and then make spaces a bit more diverse. They don't do it in the best ways, but they at least kind of ask for like some consultation and such. So that's good, I guess, without pay though. So at the highest level here for us within City Hall, I'd like to see that we have a council that represents the people and what the makeup of Abbotsford is, or even the hopes of what they want Abbotsford to look like, especially as we're becoming this hub of development. So I'd like to see some of that. I would like to see, too, just even at the educational level, that we don't have issues where a First Nations girl come home with a assignment that requests her to write 5 positive things about residential school.
Forcier is referencing an incident earlier this year when grade 6 students in Abbotsford were given an assignment asking them to highlight positive stories and facts about Canada's residential school system for Indigenous children. This is despite the fact that Indigenous children were stolen from their homes and brought to residential schools throughout history, where they were physically, emotionally, and sexually abused. And the legacy of that pain and trauma is carried forward today. Eliminating those barriers and providing more support for people of color to break into politics could be one solution, Forcier says.
Here's what they'll say. Vote. Run. This is democracy. This is what you got to do. And that's so right. But want to know, it's hard to run in a race that's already rigged, though I don't want to. I don't have the tools for it. Not to say I don't have like the education for it. I can definitely learn, or at least when it's explained to me what it would take. It's like, oh, that's beyond my means. That's maybe something in 10 years, 15 years time when I have more things secure around me. But like at this time, grassroots won't help you financially, team-wise, time-wise, and all that stuff.
Kelly Chahal, the one counselor of color that is working in Abbotsford right now, says that engagement with people of color needs to be respectful before it can be meaningful. And that's true in Abbotsford, where she hopes that there will be more people of color on council soon. There's more on that topic in the next episode. This series is by no means an exhaustive list of every incident that has contributed to Canada's history of racism, or even Abbotsford's history of white supremacy. Instead, it is a reflection led by community experts in relevant areas of expertise, meant to be part of Civil's ongoing dedication to anti-racist coverage. I'm Ali Laube for Civil Radio. Thanks for listening.